The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Thank you. Chairman, Rabbi Zelitsky, Rabbi Blake, ladies and gentlemen. I welcome this opportunity to be the guest speaker of the Merkaz, and from what I understand, at the verge of a new venue for some of its programs here at the Randabah Shul. And I give my thanks to both the Shul and the Merkaz. It seems to me that this is an exciting new development in the city of Cape Town. We visited Cape Town in 1980. And at that time, the forecast for Yiddishkeit and Torah seemed to be pretty pessimistic and dismal. And now we feel the vibrations of a new excitement and undergrowth, where people have the feeling that things can develop. And it seems that the Merkaz has a very accurate name, where it seems to be in the center of this action. And it certainly has our warmest brochas for growth and hatzloch. At the end of the lecture this evening, I would like to devote a few more words towards the programs of the Merkaz. The title for the shiur this evening actually was a little more than was printed on the poster. The title was Suicide, Abortion, Manslaughter, Murder, The Value of Human Life, The Torah Viewpoint. And what we'll try to do this evening is to go through some of the sources in our Torah to see what its viewpoint is towards human life. What is its viewpoint towards suicide or abortion or manslaughter and murder? And how does its viewpoint compare to the world that we live in today? I'll try to not be too technical this evening and not get involved in too many legalities, and also, for the sake of simplicity, usually in the Yeshiva in Johannesburg, usually quote the Hebrew text word for word and then translate. But this evening, rather, I'll basically just cite the translation. The basic sources for this lecture will be taken from the Chamisha Kum Sefera scriptures and from the Talmud and from the Rambam Maimonides, who was one of our greatest legal authorities on the Talmud. The general laws regarding shedding of innocent blood is cited to us firstly in the Sefer Torah in Parshas Nerach. Torah states, after the Almighty came to Noah and permitted him to eat the flesh of animals, "Va'achesdimchem lenafsheisechem edresh miyad kol chayo edreshem." Your blood from your lives I shall seek. and I shall seek it from the animals who destroy it. Uviyat ha'odom uviyat ish ochim edreish, and from man and his brother I shall seek as nefesh ha'odom, he who destroys the life of man. Sheifet dam ha'odom ba'odom domo yishofet, he who spills the blood of a man, his blood shall be spilled. Ki betzelem elekim oso es ha'odom, because man is created in the image of the Almighty. Atem teru urvu, and you shall be fruitful and multiply. Shirtsu va'oretz urvuva, you shall multiply mightily through the earth, throughout the earth. A few comments which our sages cite on these sentences is the blood, your blood I shall seek. This does not only refer to someone who destroys the life of another man, but someone who also destroys his own life. Shefech dama odom bo odom, he who spills the blood of a man within a man. This does not only refer to the spilling of the blood of another man, but of the fetus, of the embryo. This is odom bi odom, a man which is in another person. And ba'atem piru urvu, you shall be fruitful and multiply. What does this have to do with spilling of blood? Sages cite mikan, from here we learn, shekol mi shemenei atzmai mi piryo viribyo is hukish l'shefek domi. Someone who refrains from multiplying his seed, from reproduction, is also in the category of spilling of blood, because he is withholding life from the world. We have a second basic source in the scriptures. This is at the end of Sefer Bamidbar, in Parshas Matris. Excuse me. In Parshas Maser. Here the Torah tells us, not only when someone kills with intent is he also guilty, but even if he kills by error, we are commanded, Daber el b'nei Yisrael v'amat aleihem, speak to the sons of Israel and say to them that when you cross the river going into Eretz Yisrael, you shall make for yourselves ore miklot, cities of refuge. So he who kills without intent but through error, he will have a place of refuge where he can flee. Because the goyel hadam, the close kin to the murder victim, has a right to revenge the blood of their kinship. Therefore he has a right to kill this man. Therefore the Torah gave him cities of refuge where he can go and be safe. And he will have a refuge and protection from the law, if protection through the law, if he so deserves it. And he shall stay in these cities until the high priest dies. The sages comment, why must he stay in these cities until the high priest dies? Shehu bala hashrishkina b'Yisrael, because the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, it's his duty to bring the presence of the Almighty amongst Israel. And the Ratzeach, the murderer, bala salikes hashkina b'Yisrael, he comes to divorce the presence of the Almighty from Israel. Therefore, he must stay there till he dies. The Torah continues, you shall not take any ransom from the one who is guilty to free him. And you shall not take ransom from the one who is supposed to flee to the city. V'leisachanifu es ha'oretz asher atem bo, and you shall not make the land wicked. Because it is the blood of innocent people that bring ruination to the land. And the land will not cleanse itself from innocent blood which was shed, except through the blood of the murderer. And do not bring impurity to the land which I dwell in, because I am the Lord your God who dwells amongst you in Israel. These are the general sources when it comes to the spilling of innocent blood. Let's go into a few specifics this evening and see what we can learn regarding this subject. The Rambam Maimonides writes, the beginning of Hilchos Reitzeach Ushmiras HaNefesh, the beginning of the laws which pertain to murder and guardians one's life. Whoever takes the life of a person, transgresses the negative commandment, as we cited in the Torah, and as is stated in the Ten Commandments, Lei Tirtzoch, you shall not murder. If he kills with intent, and there are witnesses, then he is guilty of capital punishment. And if he is convicted by a proper court, this is during the time when we had proper courts, when our judges had full authority, during the time of the Beis Hamikdash of the Temple in Eretz Yisrael, then he was to be put to death by the sword. Second law, mitzvah b'yad ge'el adam, the closest kin of the family has a mitzvah. It's a commandment that he should avenge the death of his brother. And he is given the opportunity to destroy the murderer. If he cannot, or if he refuses, then the mitzvah belongs to the courts, to the Beis Din. The courts are commanded under no circumstances, when he is convicted guilty, to take a ransom for his life, even if he gives all of the money in the world. The court has no right to vindicate him, or the family of the victim has no right to come and say that we must have compassion on this man, we forgive him. Because the life of the victim does not belong to the courts, nor does it belong to the family. The life of the victim belongs to the Almighty. And the Almighty has commanded, do not take a ransom for the life of the murderer. There is no mitzvah in the Torah that the Torah has shown so much outrage to Shvichas Domim as the spilling of innocent blood. As it states, and he quotes the sources which we read, Ki Adam hu yachni b'sa'oretz, because blood brings ruination and impurities to the land. There is no difference if the victim was an adult, or there is no difference if the victim was in the first day of his life. In the eyes of the law, of the Torah, person is 100 years old, or 40 years old, or a baby that was born that day. If it was a normal, healthy baby, and someone killed him with intent, proper witnesses, and the other conditions which are necessary, then this is murder in the first degree, and he's liable for the full offense. There is no difference whether the victim is a male or a female. There is no difference if the victim is healthy or if he's sick. Or, under most conditions, even if he's very sick and he's dying. Now here we get to some technicalities that we will not go into this evening. But in our cases, when a person might not be considered in a complete state of life, therefore, if someone murders him, it is not considered in the eyes of the Torah as first-degree murder. It's homicide. To which the courts can punish him. But nevertheless, as we'll see shortly, there are many cases of murder that the courts are not capable of punishing. But Mishamayim, in the eyes of heaven, he is a murderer and he will be punished. Now this covers the Ritzeach B'Meitzin, the one who murders with intent. From here we see the viewpoint of the Torah in regards to capital punishment. Someone murders intentionally, and there are witnesses, and due warning. One of the conditions is that he must be warned. The warning is given. And he is of sound mind, the murderer. Then this is homicide, this is first degree murder. And if convicted, he is guilty and punishable with capital punishment. So we see that the Torah does not take a soft line. In regards to capital punishment. On the other hand, this is all only after he has been convicted beyond a doubt and his guilt has been proven. The Rambam states, someone who kills a memisin aysoy aidin belayareim aysoy, we have no right to take action against this person until he is brought to the courts, until he's judged properly. As it states, that you shall not kill the murderer until he is brought before the courts. And this is true with all criminals who have committed an offense, that we cannot take any action against them until their guilt has been proven beyond a doubt in the courts. Here we see a fine line. A protection of the innocent and the destruction of the guilty. And the Torah is very clear on this definition. Innocent life must be protected all of the time and by all means. On the other hand, the guilty must be punished. To determine guilt, we must go to all extremes. To qualify to sit on the bench of the court is not easy. Evidence must be heard, witnesses must be presented, and they must be qualified witnesses. People with shady reputations would not at all be accepted. People who were not upright were not accepted. great deliberation and studying of the issues. Would commend it. And it was only after long deliberation where we were entirely convinced that the innocent were protected and the man is guilty. Then the Torah said that we cannot show compassion to the guilty. We must rather show compassion to the victim, not to the criminal. So there was this blade's edge which we had to deal with. An interesting example in this is brought in the Talmud, Sefer Machlokes. At the end of the first chapter, Sanhedrin Ha'ereges Echad Bishvur, a court which would give out capital punishment once every 7 years, was called the murderous court. The Blazer ben Azariah said once every 70 years. Rav Tarfon and Rav Akiva said if we were in the courts, no man would have ever received the capital punishment, because we would have worked so diligently in tearing down the prosecutor's case that he would not have been able to gain a conviction. Shimon Gamliel said to Rabbi Kiva of Tarfon, you are marvin sheikh kidomim in Israel, you will bring more bloodshed to Israel. Because from one aspect, we must go with great caution and precautions. But from the other aspect, if we are too cautious, then it will give a free hand to the murderers. So we were commanded that the innocent must be protected. And every man is innocent. He's been proven guilty beyond a doubt. The fact is, Torah law, this became the cornerstone for the laws, legal structures of great many nations. Of Greek law, of Roman law. And no man can be punished until his guilt is sufficiently proven. But on the other hand, once we know who the criminal is, then the Torah commanded, "Ubi'arto ha'aromi kirbecho," you shall destroy evil from amongst you. The blood of the victim will not be atoned except through the blood of the guilty. This that we said, that the law can never be taken into one's own hands, there is an exception. And that is, when do we say that the person must be brought to trial? That's after he committed the act. But what happens if we see someone pursuing a victim with the intent to kill him? Then, Kol Yisrael Mitzuvin Lahatzil Hanidov, all of Israel is obligated to save the victim from the pursuer, even if necessary by the life of the pursuer. There's no difference if the victim is an adult or a child. There's no difference if the pursuer is an adult or a child. For example, if we see a man has a knife, chasing after an innocent person with the intent to kill him, then we are obligated to try to stop this man. All of Israel, any person, any man or woman, is obligated to try to stop this person by wounding him, by wounding his arm or his leg, or by blinding him, any way possible. If that is not successful, then we are obligated to kill the pursuer in order to save the victim. In this case, we are not only allowed, but we are commanded to take the law into our own hands in order lahatzul es nefesh an yadov, to save the life of the victim. If a person does not involve themselves. You know, we're living today in a time when people don't like to get involved. They see a crime taking place, they say, it's not my business. They walk away from it. In big cities, in Europe, in America, they say that there can be a murder on the street. People walk by. This is not the Torah's viewpoint. Anyone who's present when such a crime is taking place is obligated by Torah law to do everything possible to save the victim. If he doesn't, then he has transgressed Torah law. This does not only refer to murder, this refers to the saving of a life of another Jew under all circumstances. For example, if we see someone drowning, or if we see gangsters are closing in on him, or he's being attacked by wild animals, or for example, we hear that gangsters are planning a plot for him, they're laying a trap for him, then a Jew is obligated to do everything in his power to save the life of the innocent man. If someone does it, then he transgresses two negative commandments, Leisameid al dam re'echa, that you shall not stand by idly while the blood of your brother is being spilled. Also, another negative commandment, Lo sochus einu, that you shall not have compassion on the murderer. And he transgresses a positive. And even though we cannot punish a person for this act, because this is a passive act, the courts have generally only the power to punish when a person does a transaction in an active way, not in a passive way. But still, this is a very severe transaction. Shekol ha-ma'aved nefeshachas mi-Yisrael ki ilu ibe kol ha'ilam kulei. Because whoever causes the loss of one innocent life amongst the Jewish nation, he is as if he has destroyed the entire world. And whoever fulfills the life, whoever saves the life of one Jewish person, it's as if he has saved the entire world. So here again we see the Torah's viewpoint towards innocent blood, and we see another notch involved. Contrary to today's attitude that non-involvement is the best stance, we are commanded by the Torah that we must involve ourselves in saving innocent blood, and we are forbidden by the Torah to close our eyes. We have another case that the Talmud cites in Maimonides' quotes, an interesting case of the pursuer and the victim. If a pregnant woman was having difficulty giving birth to the point where the doctors say that there is no way that we can save the woman and save the fetus at the same time. It's a situation where we can save only one. Then the law is that the fetus must be destroyed in order to save the mother's life. Because the fetus is causing danger to the mother's life. He is a pursuer, and the mother is an innocent victim. This is only before the fetus is born. Once the fetus is born, then the law is that we cannot touch either. So here we learn three principles. Firstly, that a fetus also classifies under the legal status of being a redeh, being a pursuer. And in such case, we have a right to destroy them. Secondly, though, This is only while the fetus is still unborn. Once the fetus' head has come into the air of the world, even though he might still be causing danger to the mother, we cannot take one life for the other. There's a long discussion to the authorities as to what the interpretation of this is, but this is the law. Thirdly, we see from here that a fetus can be destroyed only because it's endangering the mother's life. Otherwise, we're not allowed to touch it. It is also a life. It is not the same degree of life where it was already born, but it is also a life, and the Torah forbade us to destroy it, unless it was placing a danger upon the mother. Here we have a little insight to abortion, which amongst many nations, so-called civilized nations of the world, it is taken very lightly. Many claim that the fetus is owned by the mother. Therefore, the mother has a right to make a decision whether it should live or not live. Many claim that it's not life until so many days old or so many months old, or until it's properly born. And therefore, it's the decision of the parents, or the medical society, the doctor, or the courts, take his life from him. The Torah's viewpoint is very clear in this aspect. If it's causing a grave danger to the mother's life, then it must be destroyed. But if not, it's a life. And we have no right to terminate this life. There's another category which also gives us much insight on this subject. That is, not all murderers, even though they are murderers, are liable to punishment by the courts. For example, if someone hires another party to kill a victim. This is common amongst the mafia, amongst other criminals. They don't kill themselves, they don't do the dirty work themselves, but they engage others to do it for them. Or someone kills another person with intent, malicious homicide, but he does it in a way in which it was not a direct act. For example, he took his victim and tied him up and left him in the bush where he knew eventually that animals would come and eat him. Or someone who kills himself, suicide. Kol echod me'elu shefek domim. Maimonides cites sources in the Talmud that there is no doubt that all of these cases are shefek domim. They are murderers. There is no doubt. Whether he killed himself or he killed through a hired hand, or whether he killed directly or he killed indirectly, or if he killed himself, he is a murderer. He is a shefek domim. And the cardinal sin of murder is in his hands. And he is liable for the death penalty to heaven. But the courts, our courts, have no authority to prosecute these people. We were given the right to punish only when a person murders directly. So this means that heaven will take care of you. but we cannot. And then the Maimonides cites the source, and he brings what we read from chapter of Nayah. It states, he who spills the blood of man, his blood shall be spilled. It means he himself. I shall seek your blood of your life. This is referring to suicide, your blood. I shall seek the blood of your lives, which are taken by wild animals. This is referring to someone who kills by tying his victim where animals can come and destroy him. I shall seek the blood which is taken through your brother. This refers to he who hires someone to commit murder for him. And since in all of these places it states, I shall seek, this refers that the Almighty will incur the punishment, will bring the punishment on this person. We of the courts do not have authority. So from here we see that the only time the authorities are capable of giving out capital punishment is only if the murderer commits the offense directly. If it's indirectly, then a murderer he is. But we have no authority to deal with him as far as capital punishment is concerned. From here we see an insight into suicide. There are those who feel, if it's my life, I can do what I want with it. I can live the life, my life the way I want. I can destroy my life the way I choose. Hareza Shefet Don, someone who takes his own life is a murderer. Because he has destroyed human life. Talmud goes into the discussion, speaking of someone who is of sound mind and does this through choice. What do we do when people commit murder, but not directly, in the way cited? Do we just let this continue? Do we stand by passively? What is the law referring to? All of these people who are murderers, but they cannot be put to death by the courts. During the time of the king of Israel, when Israel had a king, for example, during the time of Shaul or David or Shlomo, King Saul or King David, King Solomon, if the king wanted to kill these people, he had permission. Even though they were not liable for the capital punishment, but the king was given the authority where he could kill these people. If he didn't, if the court saw that the spilling of blood was becoming something very cheap in the eyes of people, then the courts also had the authority to make an extraordinary exception and put these murderers to death. If neither of them decided that they would put the murderer to death, nevertheless, they were obligated to take this person, to lock him up, to afflict him heavily for years to come, with all types of affliction and all types of pains, in order that the other is showing, the other evil people of the land shall not say that I will destroy my enemy in a way where the courts cannot revenge them, just like this person did it and he got away with it. This is the law. Now from here we have a great deal to learn. We see that the Torah commanded us that we must live in a society, not in a jungle. The Torah commanded us that there must be government. There must be fair government, not anarchy. The Torah commanded us that we must protect the innocent. We must have compassion towards the innocent. Not that we must protect the guilty, that we must have compassion towards the guilty. The Torah commanded us that we are not to tolerate terrorism. We are not to tolerate mafiaism. Even where we could not exercise actual capital punishment, but we are forbidden to close our eyes to this, lest the blood of innocent people becomes cheap. This is the court's responsibility. We have another example to this, and that is, what would happen if someone is a murderer, but he's freed on a technicality? For example, someone murders in the first degree, but the two witnesses, which are required, they did not see together. They witnessed the act, but one was in one building looking out the window, and the other was in another building looking out the window. He would be freed on a technicality. Or for another example, if someone would kill in the first, with intent, malicious homicide, but he was not warned beforehand, again he would be freed on the technicality. But the law is that even though these people are freed on the technicality, we must do the same thing to them. We must lock them up, and we must afflict them, and not let them get away with it, because they are guilty without a doubt. And it is the court's responsibility, the Torah commanded, to protect innocent blood. And then Maimonides writes something very interesting here. In no other place do we have such a right. When someone is free through a technicality of the law, where we still punish him. But in all of the rest of the Torah, if a person is convicted, then he's liable for punishment. If he's vindicated, he must go free. The only exception is the spilling of innocent blood. And why is this? Because even though there are transgressions that are more severe in the Torah than the spilling of the blood, but there is not a greater ruination or destruction to society than the spilling of innocent blood. Even idolatry, or even incest, or adultery, or the desecration of Shabbos, or other such transgressions, they do not cause a ruination of society like the spilling of innocent blood. Because all of the other transgressions are between man and the Almighty, while these are between man and his fellow. And whoever has this transgression in his hand, even though he has all of the mitzvahs in the world, it will not be sufficient to save him on the day of judgment. So therefore we see that the Torah took a very hard line when it comes to the spilling of innocent blood, that even if the man is saved by a technicality, we are not allowed to let him go scot-free. If his guilt is known and proven, except there was a technicality in the law. Today's court systems, it's actually the popular style to try to destroy the prosecution through a technicality. To try one stalling tactic after another, until everyone becomes so frustrated and so tired that the murderer is back at work and walking the streets. Someone recently showed me an article from Time magazine that in a southern city in the United States, no, excuse me, in Detroit, Michigan, in the United States, Detroit is the headquarters of the motor car industry. And during the recent recession, there was an awful lot of unemployment. And a lot of the American business was gained by Japanese manufacturers. There was a young Chinese boy who was celebrating his engagement party at some club. And there was a father and son who worked at one of the auto plants. And they took a baseball bat and killed the Chinese boy. The article wrote that their claim was, is because they're taking our panosha, they're taking our livelihood away from us. The article also commented that the fact that these two people held jobs and they weren't laid off, that didn't seem to make much difference. And the fact that it's the Japanese that were manufacturing the cars and not the Chinese, that also seemed not to make too much difference to them. And anyhow, they were brought to the trial. And the judge said that since these people never had a record before, and they're nice people, he gave them a light prison sentence, which he subsequently suspended. They went off scot-free, and he said, they're nice people like this, you don't send to jail. The Supreme Court of the United States and other bodies, especially the bodies that are interested in civil rights, have been trying to do something about it. But this is justice by the nations. This is contrary to what we're studying here tonight. If a person is guilty, then the innocent must be protected, not the guilty. If you don't know he's guilty, then he's innocent. But when proven guilty, he is not liable for the full punishment of the court. We are bidden not to allow him to go scot-free, to let society become a jungle, or an anarchy, or a hotbed of terrorism. But we are bidden to destroy this man in any possible way. In order, leman yedu v'yero, in order that the entire nation shall see and shall fear. What does it mean, the law of the Torah, and what does it mean to take the innocent life of another person? Then we have another category. Something seemingly not relevant to us, but to the contrary, very relevant. Till now, we've been speaking about murder with intent. When we quoted from the Chumash, from the scriptures, we quoted that there's another chapter which reads, which teaches about murder through error, mishpogo. The law is, anyone who kills through error, he must go into exile. He must leave his home and go into one of the cities of refuge. This again was during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, the temple, and when we had a king and a court system. And he must stay in the city of refuge until the high priest dies. The purpose for this was two reasons. One is it was a punishment. Two is it was a safeguard. It was a punishment because murder through error is also considered a very, very grave crime. Therefore, this punishment was not death, but to be exiled from his home to the cities of refuge. Secondly, it was a safeguard for him, because as we mentioned, the Torah gave the right to the close kinship of the family to avenge their brother's blood by the blood of the murderer. In the case of murder by intent, they had a right to do this. This was done under the court structure. In the case of murder by
error, they also had a right to do this. But on the other hand, the Torah gave a safeguard to the murderer himself by fleeing to one of the cities of refuge where there they were not allowed to touch him. We see from here another concept. That when someone is murdered, Torah declared that people must be outraged and his family must be outraged and his family should be avenged for the blood of the innocent. What does it mean to murder by error? It does not mean through an accident which was entirely unavoidable. There are some who kill through error, but it is almost totally unavoidable. For example, something happened that never happens. A man was doing something which was totally innocent. Let's say he was in a very, very isolated place where people never come. And he was cutting down timber. And all of a sudden someone came in. Well, let's say he had a sign, danger. Someone ignored the sign and came in. And the tree fell on this person. This is considered killing through accident, not through error. And in such case, he is not guilty at all. There is another case when he kills through negligence. For example, he's doing construction work right in a public domain where people are coming and going all of the time. This is not the case of the Torah. That would be called manslaughter. That is a degree of homicide. And in such a case, the Torah says that he does not warrant the safety of the city of refuge. He is not allowed in the city of refuge. It will not atone for them. That was negligence. But the case where we're speaking, which was not unavoidable accident, at the same time, it was not negligence. It was a middle case. This is killing through error. And in such case, he has the atonement of the city of refuge, plus the safeguard of that city. What can we learn from this? People, many people feel this is not too relevant to our society. Not so. A man who's driving along in his motor car and he's negligent and he's killed someone on the road, in the eyes of the Torah, he's a murderer. He's a murderer. You've taken the life of an innocent man. And in such a case, he would not even be given the safeguard of the cities of refuge. If he's driving along in a car, and the car was maintained properly, and all of a sudden the steering mechanism gave away, or the braking mechanism gave away, in such a case, he couldn't be held responsible. But if he was negligent to check the devices, if he was negligent to maintain his auto properly, if he was driving under the influence of alcohol, if he was speeding in a zone exceeding the speed limit, if he was careless, if he was tailgating, killed another man at the pedestrian, or through another auto accident, he's a murderer. And if it was something that could not be considered negligence, but on the other hand, it was not totally unavoidable, then he is known as the Retzeach Bishkok, he who has killed through error. And during the time of the temple, And if we had a court system, he would be required to exile himself to the city of refuge. And the kinship of the victim would have a right to take his life if he would leave that city. Excuse me for a moment. Now this is something which must be considered with the greatest amount of seriousness. Because people take driving as a big joke. It's something for the next person to do. Keep the rules. When there's a speed trap, that's the time. How many times do we see people going at breakneck speed because they're late for an appointment? The Torah does not allow us even to save our own life by taking another life. This we'll see a little more explicitly in a minute. The Torah does not allow us to save our own life or another Jew's life by taking another life. Yet we are allowed to endanger people's lives if we're late for an appointment. How many times do you meet mothers in the morning going at breakneck speed because their children are late for school? If nothing would ever happen, so then we could say, you're making a big discussion over nothing. But I don't want to tell you, I myself as a rabbi, how many funerals I have been, how many young lives have been terminated, and how many families have been broken forever because of people who died through traffic accidents. Sons, daughters, husbands, wives, mothers, and fathers. And one of the great blemishes on the society of Israel today and the society of South Africa is that they have the worst traffic fatality record amongst all of the industrial nations of the world. We published recently in the AA magazine that it seems to be a race between Israel and South Africa. And South Africa has the highest pedestrian fatality record amongst all of the industrial nations of the world. Israel has the highest motor accident. And South Africa has 7 times the amount of traffic accidents per mile, per auto mile, than the United States. 7 times the amount of traffic accidents per auto mile than the United States. Even though the United States has millions of more automobiles than South Africa, it creates a much greater congestion, a much greater dangerous situation. If people look at it, it's a joke. The rules are for the next person. The Torah commands us that if we're ever in a situation where our life or the life of another person might be put in danger, then there is no greater transgression in the entire Torah that brings ruination to a society than the spilling of innocent blood. That's why this chapter is very relevant to us today. There's another law. What happens if a dead person is found to be murdered? You don't know who did it. cannot find the murderer. Then the law is the elders of the great court of Yerushalayim, the greatest court, the Sanhedrin Agdola, the Supreme Court of Jerusalem. They would come out and measure, if it's found on the road between two cities, they would measure to see which city is closest. After it was determined which is the closest city, then the elders, all of the elders of that court of that city, would come out to the place, and they would bring an animal, a type of a sacrifice. And they would go to a river, and they would wash their hands. And they would pronounce, in the Hebrew language, Yodeinu Leishofku Es Adon Hazer. Ve'eineinu Leiro'u. Our hands did not spill this blood, and our eyes did not see it. That in no way did we cause this. We were not callous to this person. We did not chase him out of the city. We did not let him leave the city without caring for him. And in no ways were we accessories to this crime. And then the priest would say, Kaper la'amcha Yisrael, that the Almighty forgive his nation Israel. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, would forgive them. Here we see another degree, that of communal responsibility. If a murder takes place, then the murderer is responsible. If we cannot find the murderer, then the guilt is shared by the community. Maybe they did something which could have caused this, and they need an atonement. The community is responsible, and the courts are the voices and the conscience of the community. Bloodshed is something which cannot be tolerated and cannot be removed from our sight. We cannot close our eyes to it and say that it does not exist. This is a further degree in the responsibility. Not only are we commanded not to take an innocent life under normal circumstances, but under no circumstances are we allowed to. Even to save another life or one's own life, or even to save many lives. The law is that if a person comes to a Jew and he says, I want you to kill your fellow Jew, and if not, I will kill you, Yomus ve'al Yehoreg, Yehoreg ve'al Yomus, then you must be put to death. You're not allowed to take that innocent life. If a Jew comes to you, if a person comes to you and he says that I want you to kill this person, if you won't kill this person, I will kill that person. I won't kill you, I'll kill that person. So now if you kill the first one, you'll be saving the second one. You have to allow yourself to be killed. What happens if nations come to us and they say, Tenu lonu echon mikem? They lay siege to a city. And they say, give us one of you. Give us one of you and we shall kill him, otherwise we will destroy the entire city. The entire city shall be killed before you have one Jewish life over to death. not only the blood of a Jew is so precious that you're not allowed to kill it needlessly, but even to save yourself, or to save another Jew, or to save many Jews, the blood of an innocent life cannot be taken. And then we have a further degree, and that is it's a positive commandment in the Torah that one must construct a fence around his roof. As it states in the Torah, "V'ashishemaki l'gagecha," you shall safeguard your roof from someone who falls. And this does not only refer to a roof, the Torah tells us in the Talmud, but this refers to any place where people go, and people live, and there's a danger. This refers to a well. This refers to a pit. This would refer to an archive, to swimming pools. And someone who does not do this, and heaven forbid someone falls and is killed, so he transgresses the positive commandment and the negative commandment, that he has caused the bloodshed of innocent blood in his house. Now here we're going a step further. Not only you're not allowed to take another person's life, but you must do everything on your property that's possible to safeguard the person's life. And if you don't, the Torah held you responsible. Now this was not something that the courts would punish a person for, because it's not murder through any direct force, but the Torah held you responsible. They saw sin domin, they therefore that you are not allowed to let blood be shed on your property, innocent blood. And then the Talmud goes further. And it states, "V'chein kol michshol, any tripping stone, sheyesh bei sakonis nefoshes, which can endanger a person's life, mitzvah esei, it's a positive commandment in the Torah, lohasira, to remove it, and to guard yourself from it, very, very exceedingly carefully, as it states, yishom alecho u'shmo nafshecho, guard yourself." Guard yourself very carefully from any possibility of causing danger to yourself or to anyone else. This is very relevant. This refers to swimming pools. This refers to allowing children to swim that cannot swim and if they're not supervised. This refers to other dangers in our property, to dangerous acts, foolhardy acts, or dangerous sport, that where one endangers his life. The Gemara says this refers to keeping dangerous animals on your property. I don't know about Cape Town, but Johannesburg now, there's a new problem. There's been many, many cases of where dangerous dogs, which have been kept by people, have harmed innocent people. Seriously. Because people today are now keeping vicious, dangerous dogs, and they keep them locked up where they become more frustrated. Talmud spoke about that many, many years ago. Have you got the Lord in Kelevra? A person is not allowed to keep on his property a dangerous animal. There is responsibility for it. The Talmud says this refers to firearms. Having firearms in such a situation where it can cause danger to one's life. It says it also refers to selling firearms to the nations of the world. We are forbidden to sell firearms to the nations of the world because we know what they want to do with it. unless it's for purely defensive reasons. This refers also to neglecting one's health to the point where he endangers himself. Many times you have a case where a doctor will tell someone, don't eat this, or you must cut out smoking, or you must not drink. It can endanger your life. This is included in this discussion. This also is a degree of bloodshed. And then we have a more sophisticated. That's one we made mention of at the beginning, where the Gemara tells us that whoever abstains from bringing more life into the world from reproducing life is also a degree of bloodshed, because there's the potential life. The life is not being brought into this world. What is the difference if the life is being taken from this world or if it's not being brought into the world? Or the Talmud states, if someone embarrasses a person publicly, where the embarrassment is so great that he becomes pale, there's a degree of bloodshed. These are more sophisticated degrees. These are some of the Torah's attitudes towards the spilling of innocent blood, suicide, abortion, murder, manslaughter. Now, if you take a look at the world that we live in today, you see it's in total antithesis. Just in recent times, without going through the world's history, there was World War I, which was fought for political reasons. There was World War II. There was the Holocaust. Aside from this, which we're all familiar with, you say there were a total of 50 to 20 million people killed. There was the war in Vietnam, which I don't think anyone knows exactly how many were killed. It didn't make that much difference. There was Russia under the Tsar, or Russia under the communist rule. There was, and there still exists, the killing of female babies in the Orient. Amongst the so-called civilized nations of the world, abortion reaches the hundreds and hundreds of thousands. Civilized nations are rife with violent crime, organized crime, mafia, or violent sports where people for entertainment can view one person trying to kill another. After all, the cornerstone of Western culture was the Roman society. And the Romans made great sport of having innocent victims fight to the death against other innocent people or against wild beasts. So absorbed have we become from the viewpoint of the nations and the world towards the spilling of blood that we are no longer even cognizant or sensitive to the Torah's viewpoint. We can give an example. When we want relaxation or entertainment, we go to a movie or watch television. Hardly a movie or a television show. that we don't see this is in the form of entertainment. Where someone is trying to kill someone else, or he does kill someone else, or whatever it might be. We become numb. The great ills of the society is we become numb. The intrinsic emotions that were given to us have become deadened. And then you have discussions among psychiatrists if it's actually good for the person or not good for the person. An interesting response. There was once an actor, Hollywood or Broadway, who was Shema Shabbos. He became religious and was keeping Shabbos. He had a shaila, he had a question. He had to act on Shabbos. Would it be permissible if he would have a non-Jew put his makeup on for him? The shaila was brought to the great Gaon, to one of the great authorities of the age, the Moshe Feinstein of New York. So he writes back an answer. In what ways would you be allowed, in what ways you wouldn't be allowed. But then at the end of the response, he writes a footnote. He says, I can't understand, my young friend, that if you want to become religious, why are you acting in the movies and on the stage? And what was of great interest to me was the reason why he criticized it. He didn't give any reason, any of the many reasons that we usually hear. He said, because how can a religious Jew reconcile what goes on in Broadway or what goes on in Hollywood when they make schaik, they make laughter, mehaoven hachamur, from the most severest transgression in the Torah, Shvitas Domim, this building of innocent law. How can that be reconciled? That is in total antithesis to becoming Torahic, to becoming a religious Jew. I can't understand, he said, how you could ask me these questions at the same time be part of such a society. This shows you how far we've gone. But for entertainment, we can bring a meal to the television and entertain ourselves with bloodshed. Yes, it's true. We know it's just acting, not real. But it seems that who are the ones that need the psychiatrist? This is how far we stray. Now let's spend the final minute or two. Why? Why was the Torah so much against the spilling of innocent blood? All right, we know the reasons. But still it seems that it's going to quite an extreme. Torah tells us, because in the sentence which I quoted from Parshat Me'ah, there's a key word there, in which it states, Shefet dama odem bo'odem dama yishofet. He who spills innocent blood, his blood shall be spilled. He would sell a melekim or so a kasatam. God tells us why. Because I have created man in the image of the Almighty. I have created man in my image. The reason why we do not become outraged by the constant spilling of blood in our surroundings is because we have forgotten what a man is. What is life? Life is cheap. Because we are no longer cognizant of what a man is, therefore we do not become offended or outraged when we see the spilling and the blood of a man. Keep it selim and a king. Only to man, and in particularly to Israel, did the Almighty imbue his image. What is that image? The great rabbi of Prague, who lived in the 16th century, explains it to us. What kind of image does the Almighty have? He has no physical image. The Almighty doesn't have a physical image, but He does have certain attributes. And if these attributes would be physically garbed, then it would look like man. Give you an example. You take an abstract concept and you tell a child, draw a picture of it. A child would be able to draw. If you would tell a child, draw a picture of a king, what would he draw? Draw a picture of a king with many servants. He would draw someone tall and upright, that's the king. And he would draw servants who are lowly and bowing, this would be the servants. The Almighty is the King of all kings. And when He created man, He imbued him also with that malchus, with that majesty. Therefore He created man to walk upright, while all other creations walk on all fours. V'yirdu bidgas hayom, you shall be the king over this world, rule the entire world. The Almighty is perfectly upright and true. Chayis mei shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu emes, His banner is that of truth. If we would want to draw a picture of the principle of truth, how would we illustrate it? By something straight. Therefore He made man upright and straight. Talmud tells us that all 613 mitzvahs correlate with the 613 different parts of the body. Man was given a physical image which correlates to the Almighty and to His Torah. And then man was given a light. Chokhmas Adam Tayar Ponov. The wisdom which was imbued in his soul glows from his face. This light comes from the Almighty's image. This is His majesty, the majesty of God. This light is only there when He lives. Once He dies, the light disappears. You ever see a person who's dead but immediately strikes you? Is the utterly paleness of his face. When a person is alive, he walks upright. Once he dies, ki lecha ticha kol berach, every knee shall bow to me, this refers to the day of death. He bows. His majesty on this world has ceased. When he is alive, he is the king. The Gemara tells us, Tinaik ben Yema ainet zorech shmira mino ha'agborim. A child in his first day does not need to be guarded from the rodents. Og melech habosh, mace. But the greatest giant, when he's dead, he must be guarded from the rodents. Because a child in his first day, if he's living, he's imbued with the image of the Almighty, and that's the image of kingship and majesty. All of the creatures fear this. Once he dies, then that image leaves him. The Gemara tells us, the Talmud tells us, that someone once went into the cave of Machpelah in Hebron, one of the sages, where Adam, the first man, is buried. And he saw him. He said, I saw his heels, the heel of his foot. And they had such a radiance equal to the bodies of the sun. Because the first man was given such an image and such a light, and the heel is the furthest from the face of the person. And the main image was given to the face of the person. And Yaakov Avinu, Jacob, who was the father of our nation, stated by him, Surasei Chakukai Bikis Yaakov. The image of his face is imbued on the throne of the Almighty. Because he was so great, and he came to such perfection, that his image was capable of being right next to the Almighty's throne. Another interesting point for Talmud tells us. It says when a person is forced to come and borrow money from another person, the light from his face fades. The person is put in an awkward position where he has to come and ask, I'm betting from under. Says the light on his face fades. Why is that? Because this already is a shortcoming. This is an undermining of his majesty. A king doesn't have to come on to others. A king gives to others. If we are forced in a situation where we have to ask from others, this is an undermining in our majesty. And therefore this is an undermining in the Tzelem Elokim, the image of Hashem. And therefore the light fades. That's why the Talmud says, Amal bin Tanei Chaver Barabim, Ein Lai Kelet Leila Mabo. Someone who embarrasses a person to such an extent where he becomes pale, the Sheikh is going, this is murder. Because he is destroying the image. If we would understand what a man is, then we would understand what bloodshed is. If the world would understand what a man is, then they would understand what bloodshed is. A man is an entire world. He's an eternity. He was given kingship in this world, where he can move the universe. This is the potential of man. Therefore the Almighty said, Shefet Dam O'odom, Domen Yishofet. He who spills the blood of a man that I have created, then the earth will be atoned only through the spilling of the hand. He will sell him in a king because I have made him in my image. This man had destroyed the world. That's what the Talmud tells us. Whoever destroys a life in Israel, it's as if he's destroying all of Israel. Whoever saves a life in Israel, it's as if he is saving all of Israel. From the viewpoint of the Torah, regarding human life, the value of human life, I think we get somewhat of an insight into, firstly, what is human life? Human life is not something to be tampered with, not something that was given to us to do what we want, right? Whether it's the life of another, or our own life, or the life of our child, or a fetus. It's a life which encompasses all of creation, and it was given to be utilized to the greatest potential, a potential which far exceeds our greatest imagination. People have written that if you would take all of the communication networks of the entire world, the brain, the human brain, might still be more complicated. One gland in the human body, one small gland, scientists have written, encompasses a greater sophisticated mechanism than the spaceships that we have sent to the moon. This is speaking of the physical body, let alone the spirit. And from here we get an idea what does it mean to destroy a life, and how we must react. And we get a further lesson. How much we are absorbed in the culture of the nations around us, and how much we have neglected our own culture and our own thought. We are living in a world of shmita zonim, spilling of innocent blood. The Jews always lived in such a world. But in the past, they protected themselves because they had created their own culture. Today, we do not. It seeps into our homes and into our minds and into our children. And this, perhaps, is the greatest teaching for us entirely from what we have learned tonight. I would like to conclude to thank once again the Merkaz for the opportunity of addressing you this evening, and to give my greatest brochas to those who are at the head of the Merkaz and to those who have helped, that may they go from strength to strength. I have a particular closeness to this venture because our sages tell us La'elam ha'talmud keipi Shahatalmud megi l'day maishu, that learning of Torah must always be given first priority, because only through the learning of Torah will there be deeds. Historically, communities that have guarded the study of Torah, the Hadorim, the Yeshivik Tanois, the Yeshivik Doles, the Bote Midroshim, these were communities that had Jewish culture, Jewish values, Kashrus, Shabbos, Stoko, Gemilas Chasodim, everything. And those communities that neglected the study of Torah, and they said that we will have Jewish values, not only did the shuls become empty, not only that there was no longer a need for kashrus, or for tzedakah, or for gemilas chesed, not only did the children become assimilated. These were areas in Germany and in Hungary and other places through our travels. But from there came atheism and denial of the Almighty. This is what our sages explicitly told us. This week's Hedra in the Kupesai Telechu, if you will walk in my statutes, and the Torah tells us, labor in Torah, then from there will come all of the blessings. If you do not labor in Torah, then the Torah brings upon us great tribulation. So therefore, there can be nothing of greater importance of creating institutions where people can come together to study Torah. A few years ago, as I mentioned, when we were in Cape Town, the future seemed to the people here to be very dismal. Today they're not talking about it. May you go from strength to strength. May you continue to come and to study Torah and to.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.